So today in this gospel from Jesus, these first sentences that he gives us are a little striking. Whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. They're very striking words because imagine if a father of a family gathered the family together, his wife, his children, maybe they're older, his grandchildren. And he says, "All right, everybody, honey, if you love the children more than me, you are not worthy of me. Children, if you love your mother more than me, you're not worthy of me. Grandkids, if you love your mom too much, my daughter, you're not worthy of me. Or sister, or brother, Betty or Jim, if you love one another more than me, you're not worthy of me." If a dad gathered his family and said that, he might sound like a tyrant. He might sound a little extreme, a little crazy. And so what is the Lord saying here? Why does he seem so demanding in how to love him? So in order to decipher truly the words of Jesus Christ and what he means by loving him above all things, we first have to ask, are there different levels of love? Are there different levels of love? Because I very easily say I love my mom or my dad or my children. But what else do I say I love? So in fact, yesterday, we have a tradition at the parish with the priests. After our 4 p.m. and our 6 p.m. Mass, we pray together and then we have pizza with the priests every Saturday. So after 6 p.m. Mass, I get in my car, I drive to Lou Malnati's, and I pick up the pizza. And I have to say, it's my favorite pizza in the world. And so when I go there, because I am genuinely very excited for the pizza, and I'm a very extroverted person, inevitably the same thing happens every week. I walk in, I see the same woman at the counter, Nikki, she knows who I am, she calls me father, and of course, the priest's clothes gives it away, and I walk over to her, and she brings up my order, and then inevitably, because I'm so excited, I say, "Nikki, I love Lou Malnati's pizza. I'm so excited, I love it so much." And as I'm driving in the car, I'm wondering, in my mind, will there be like free samples today? And see, I say at one moment, I love my mom, and the next moment, I'm saying I love pizza. And so God willing that those loves are different. And they should be different. And we all know this. In our language, we only have one word that describes love. And so we're willing to say we love those closest to us, our mom, our dad, our children, our siblings. And then we're easily able to say it for objects. I love food, I love sports, I love the Cubs, I love the Bears. And then there's this middle section that we don't know what to do with. Maybe we get to know somebody at work, or maybe we have a classmate in school, and they start becoming our friend. We really care about them. We don't know what to say when we're like, "See you later," or like, "Hey friend, I like you," or what do we express? And it's very uncomfortable for us to say to a friend, "I love you." So at times, maybe we'll drop the I and we'll just go say, "Love you, care about you." So we've got these "I love you" at the extreme of my family. I can say it. I can do it for an object. I can say it in this middle area. So what are these three classifications that we just label as love? Well, in the original Greek language, that was the writings of the gospel, there's about 6 or 7 different words for love. And 3 of those are storge, philia, and agape. Now, storge is a love of affection. Things that I like, things that I desire, could be for a person or an object. I storge cake. I storge the cubs. I just met you. I storge you. There's an affection. I'm attracted in some way to you or this object. And then above this storge love, there is filial love. This might be the first time we're hearing it, but it is in our English language. The city of Philadelphia is the city of brotherly love, because that comes from the Greek word filio, for brother love, friendship love. And this type of love is something we share in common. We enjoy being together. We help one another become better people. And then the highest form of love out of all the Greek words is agape love. And this is a sacrificial love. It has nothing to do with what you do for me. It's the fact that I love you so much, I will do anything for you. So storge, filio, and agape. And we should recognize those differences. Because it's not bad to say, I love my friend, I love my wife, but I would never say to my wife, I love my friend more than you. That'd be imbalanced. So there are levels and there are differences. And so we can all kind of connect with the storge, we can all kind of connect with the filio. And what is the agape? So in order to illustrate this, I just want to bring up one great saint, Saint Maximilian Kolbe. And many of us might know him, he's an incredible saint. He was born in the late 1800s, and at a young age, the Blessed Mother appeared to him, and she presented him with two crowns. And she said, I offer you the crown of purity and the crown of martyrdom. Which one do you want? I'll give you either one. Saint Maximilian Kolbe said, I'll take both. The purity and the martyrdom. So eventually he did discern a call to the priesthood. He gave up his entire existence as a celibate man for the people of God and for the church. He laid down his life. In his ministry, eventually, he lived during World War II, and he was eventually captured by the Nazi government for having a safe haven for Jews and ministering to them and loving them. And so they put him in Auschwitz. He was in jail, and they wouldn't let him wear his priest clothes. He had to wear the garb of all the prisoners. He had a number. He was just one of the prisoners in Auschwitz. And in Auschwitz, what would happen is if somebody would escape the prison, they would at random gather 10 people and kill them to show the other prisoners, do not mess with us. If one of you leaves, you will be responsible for 10 innocent lives. That will be on you. And so as St. Maximilian Kolbe is in this concentration camp in Auschwitz, somebody does escape. So they gather 10 people, 10 men and women. St. Maximilian Kolbe is not among the 10. And as they are selecting all 10, one man gets to his knees and he begs, please do not kill me. Spare my life. I have a wife and kids at home. Please let me live. And immediately, St. Maximilian Kolbe from the distance stepped forward and simply said, I am a Catholic priest. Please let me take his place. And they say that it was a miracle in itself that the Nazi soldiers did not shoot him on point. The fact that he stepped forward and just spoke. Not only is that a miracle, but they did grant his desire. And they allowed him to take the place of that man. And that man eventually did go home. He survived World War II. So they took Maximilian Kolbe and the other 9 prisoners and they put them into a starvation bunker to let them die. And they said that the people, other prisoners and the guards, could hear from the bunker this laughter and this singing and this praises and gospel songs. And they couldn't believe it because whenever people would go in there, they were just dying in despair. But there is St. Maximilian Kolbe praising God and bringing people to joy even at the moment of death. And one by one, the people die. And eventually all that was left was Maximilian Kolbe. After a little over 2 weeks, he would not die. Not only would he not die, but the guards were angry because he was so joyful. And so they were so frustrated that they then gave him the lethal injection. And he died a martyr for the church and for the Jewish men and women, especially for that man who survived. And that's agape love. He got nothing in return from the other man. In fact, after the moment he stepped forward and offered himself, he would never see that man again. Because agape love is never, what are you doing for me? What do I get out of it? But simply, I'll give everything to you. Agape love, of course, is Christ on the cross. And so what is it in our lives that keeps us from this agape love? Because it's easy to storge the cubs, or it's easy to storge food or a person I just met. It's easy almost all the time to filio somebody. It's easy to maybe be filial love to a friend or even my wife. I might not want to make sacrifices for my spouse or make sacrifices for my children, but I can easily friendship love them. That's easy. I give something to you, give something to me. Nice even exchange. Money in, gifts out. But it's hard to agape. So what keeps us in the way? And of course, what is our biggest stumbling block is the fact that we are inclined to sin. We are inclined to sin. What does this mean? At the moment that Adam and Eve committed that original sin, we obtained this thing called concupiscence. And what is concupiscence? It is prior to the fall, our will is on an even plane, like a table. And then you put a ball on top of the table, our will, and people can speak to you and give you reason and think of this and think of that. And we debate what is right, what is wrong. And then we can move our will to a choice. Once original sin entered the world, we now have this thing called concupiscence, which means we are inclined to sin. So our will is no longer on an even plane. It is rather on an incline. Imagine putting that ball on the incline, sin at the bottom. We now want to sin. We are inclined to it. And so that's what's keeping us from sacrificial love. And the greatest lie in this concupiscence and in this sin, in this human brokenness, is that we are presented with a sin. And we think, here's this sin, this thing I want. I've had a long day and I want to have a drink at the end of the day. And I think, if I don't have that drink, I won't feel better. I won't be alive enough. I'll stay tired or depressed. Or I'm not having the best marriage, and there's this other person, and maybe if I spend time with them, I'll be fully alive if I'm with them. Or I'm afraid if everyone knows the truth, and so I'll lie because I'm afraid if I don't tell them the truth, they won't love me and I won't be alive. So sin is presented, and it tells us that will give you life. But then precisely by choosing the drink, by choosing the lie, by choosing the gossip, by choosing the other person or the thing on the internet or the other object, we choose death. We're never alive. And we all know this. When we have committed a sin, we do not feel life. We feel a death without a resurrection. So the only time we will ever obtain true life is every day we are presented to make a choice. And we look at the drink when we get home, or the internet, or Facebook, or that book that I love, and then we look at our kids, or my wife, or the dishes that need to get cleaned. And I say, I'm going to choose that. I'm going to die for my family. And that will bring me life. And so we have to recognize the only way that the levels of love fall into balance is if I first love God. He shows me that He died for me. When He gets nothing in return, I receive that agape love, and then I can pour it out. Because of our brokenness, because of our concupiscence, because of our inclination to sin, it is not innate in us to be sacrificial. We have to receive that gift from God and then give it. So now, how do we practically become like Maxima and Colby, pure and sacrificial? How do we become like Jesus Christ? How do we become like the great saints? How do we move the incline to sin back to the even level? Because that's what a saint is. Why don't we ask ourselves two questions every single day? The first thing at the end of the day is, what did I die to today? What did I die to today? When I was at work, did I actually die for my work so that I could do a better job? Or did I think, I'll just die over in the break room and not really do anything? Because anytime we give ourselves, we die somewhere. When I get home, am I going to die and be with my wife? Or am I going to die to the TV? When I am tempted, where am I going to die? Because the choice where you die is a choice whether either be life or just live in death. So the first question, where did I die today and actually obtain life? And the second question, what do I do when no one else is around? What choices do I make when no one else is around? Because this really tells you if you actually love God above all things. So even the simple thing of, I am at a public restaurant, I go to the bathroom, and there is a paper towel on the ground. And for a moment, my brain thinks, oh, there's a paper towel on the ground. Ah, there's a worker. The worker can pick that up. He's paid to do that. He'll get that. I can make that choice, or I can go, I'm going to pick it up and put it in the trash. No one else is going to see it. No one will applaud you. No one else will care. Will you do it? Will you give that gift to God? When I come home and maybe the dishes are dirty or something needs to be cleaned or the kids are going crazy and I think, ah, someone else will take care of it. The older kid will take care of my younger kids or my spouse will do it. Well, I say, I'm going to do that. I'm going to pick up those things. I'm going to do this thing for my spouse. They might not say thank you. The kids might not say thank you. Maybe they're a baby. They physically can't speak to you. Well, I still do it because agape love is never a check mark. Agape love is never keeping score. When you're keeping score in a relationship, it is not agape. So the question is, will you agape the people you encounter? Will you agape even the stranger? Will you agape even the person that you cannot stand? Will you still be sacrificial for the person you don't even like to look at? Once you can do that, you have loved God above all things. So as we receive the Eucharist today, what did I die to? What did I die to? And lastly, am I going to live and give this agape love? Am I going to be sacrificial for the other person? And what do I do when no one else is around?